The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 8, The World Before is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps, talking about the mid-Season 10 finale of The Walking Dead. I'm Josh Wigler, joined here by Jessica Lease. Jess, I can't believe we're already talking about the mid-season finale of Season 10. Time really flew by.
Yeah, it's gone super duper fast. It's gone as fast as a bunch of people sitting in a horse-drawn carriage repurposed from an old Corvette.
Yeah, which is kind of slow, actually.
It's
so
faster than you think.
I guess it's faster than you think. It is always very weird and surreal to watch like one of those scenes with Michonne and Judith in the Corvette moving so slowly. It's like you imagine people are just like pushing them to the gas station from behind and they're just like not in the shot.
Yeah, it does kind of, it is reminiscent of that, but it is one of my favorite things about the look and feel of the show. And I think to a lesser extent, the look and feel of the comics is the way that they have repurposed things that they would not continue to be able to use in the way that they were originally intended. And so I love that they're using like the chassis from an old car as their wagon that gets pulled by a horse. Like that makes perfect sense in a way that I think is really carefully thought out.
Makes more or less sense than Dante as a whisperer. Has the needle moved at all for you on this issue after the mid-season finale?
Well, it feels like they shot a scene just for us at the top of the episode.
You're like, oh shit, we gotta go back. We gotta film something quickly. We're gonna get reamed on post-show recaps.
Yeah, they like deep faked Dante and Alpha having this conversation. They're like, okay, what was the other point they made? Oh, okay. Well, what about Lydia? Okay, we did that. What about how he's not institutionalized as a whisperer yet? Okay. It was dumb. It was dumb, okay? I'm standing by this twist is not well thought out. And yeah, I appreciate the effort, I guess, but that's like a C-minus effort to fan wank away all of these issues that we had. And I think most of the issues are still very present.
But fairly impressive CGI budget to deep fake all of that on such short notice. That's like, I don't know, the Russians must be proud.
Yeah, like, look, it's good technology.
Maybe they got that technology from the satellite that fell.
Oh, that's a good point. And, you know, they got that Russian-English dictionary. They're able to unlock a lot of secrets.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we'll talk about everything that's going on with Dante. Horse-drawn carriages, big herds of walkers, and all sorts of shenanigans here on The World Before. Not to be confused, Jess, with The Walking Dead World Beyond, which is the official title for Series 3 in The Walking Dead scripted TV universe. I am a little bit bummed, I must confess, that the title that they pitched at New York Comic Con, Look Who's Walking Now, has been abandoned. I thought that was a great idea. But this is like the young and the deadless. This is the Walking Dead, Muppet Babies version of The Walking Dead, is The Walking Dead World Beyond. Starring Julia Ormond. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it looks like it might actually not suck. So I guess I'll give it a shot.
We'll give it a shot. We'll give it a shot before we decide to throw it on the scrap heap with Fear of the Walking Dead.
Yeah, and you know, every so often something comes off the scrap heap and like comes after us and tries to eat us. So
it's true. You just never really know. Jess, I feel like a quick survey of the Walking Dead Twitterati and like the blogosphere suggests to me that maybe, just maybe, The World Before didn't land with the authority that some either hoped for or tend to expect from a Walking Dead finale. I know IO9 was, IO9 always has, Rob Bricken has great recaps over at IO9, and his headline, which I don't have directly in front of me, was fairly harsh. It was something like, okay, well, I guess The Walking Dead sucks again. I feel like that's pretty harsh. There's definitely still some good stuff, and you're like, I don't think that you can outright condemn an episode that had like that really horrifying Sadiq scene with him like, you know, marching towards Coco and everything. But beyond that, What did you think of this? Are you more thumbs up than thumbs down? More thumbs down than thumbs up? How did this net out for you this episode?
Well, you know, Josh, this is the way that television series pace themselves nowadays. I think it used to be that they would save all the really awesome, exciting stuff for the season finale or the mid-season finale. I guess mid-season finale is a relatively recent development, but for these cliffhangers where we're going to go on hiatus for a little while, you would always have the most exciting stuff get saved up for that particular beat right before you go away. And then you had like your Game of Thrones is coming along where you would do the shocking thing in episode 9 before episode 10 and have episode 10 be all falling action. And now I feel like that's the expected thing. The penultimate episode is the one where the cool stuff happens. And then the ultimate episode is the one where everybody reacts to all the cool stuff that happened. And
right.
So I'm never expecting anything great out of a season finale anymore because I already saw the cool stuff happen last episode. But that being said, they could have reacted to it in a slightly better and more compelling way. I do agree that the scene with Sadiq was one of the more genuinely terrifying things I've ever seen on this show. But the rest of it is kind of like, yeah, all right, okay. Here's right. a new character we're supposed to care about, and you're just going to introduce this whole new arc and like leave it there for 3 months. Okay, sure, whatever.
Listen, I'm excited to see Kevin Carroll is the actor who is playing Virgil. By the way, that headline from Rob Bricken at IO9, The Walking Dead is bullshit again. And the lead of the article is, "Welp, it was fun while it lasted." And then it gives a big spoiler warning and gets into the recap.
I generally like what he has to say. It's good stuff.
But yeah, I love Kevin Carroll, who's playing the Virgil character. He is John Murphy of The Leftovers fame. Great character on that show that is near and dear to my heart. But it's almost kind of like, and also The Leftovers cast actually just had a really great Sunday night with the rest of the Murphy clan rocking it over on Watchmen. But it feels like, why should I be excited when it seems like Virgil was introduced just to get Michonne off the show for probably like the next 7 episodes until she shows up for the season 10 proper finale.
Yeah, so he's one linen pantsuit short of Georgie.
yeah, really, right? Like, he's new Georgie. Maybe that's where he's taking her. Maybe Georgie and Maggie have just been on like Bloodshot Island or whatever the hell it's called. And that's his family. Maybe Georgie's his wife and Maggie's his daughter.
Wow. I know you've got your action figures out. You're setting this tableau up. I can picture it at your little podcast station with your like dark helmet dolls.
Yes. That's exactly what's happening right now.
You know, that's a real island. I looked this up.
What's it called?
It's called Bloodsworth Island.
Bloodsworth Island. Slugworth Island.
Yeah. It's where you have to go after you fail the test not to sell secrets to your competitors. It's in Tangier Sound, and that's a real place. It's in Chesapeake Bay. I don't know why I was compelled to make sure it was a real place, but it is, and there's actually nothing on it right now.
It's barren.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's wildernessy.
I'm kind of excited to go there on the show if that's what ends up happening. I think we haven't really... It's such a zombie trope, right? Like a zombie movie trope of like, we got to get to a deserted island. We'll live there. That's how we're going to survive the apocalypse. Have we really seen anything like that on The Walking Dead? Like, the closest we've come to that is maybe some of the Mexico stuff in Fear of the Walking Dead. So, I mean, like, I'm not necessarily mad at the idea of a Bloodsworth Island episode, except for the fact that Danai Gurira is only signed on for a handful of season 10 episodes. So if we're going to do a Bloodsworth Island episode with Danai Gurira, that's like one of her like 2 or 3 episodes left on the show. Rick better be there is all I'm saying. We're going to spend a full Michonne episode on Bloodsworth Island, or she better be in like full pirate regalia is the other possible solution there. But I don't know. I was excited to see Kevin Carroll on the show, but it feels like this character is being introduced literally just to escort Michonne off screen for the next little while so that they can bring her back in surprising capacity later on in the Whisperer War.
But how much would that suck if this was just the last we were seeing of Michonne?
That would be an awful ending for Michonne. That she just goes away on a boat. She says, like, it's a 2 to 3 day mission. I'm going to come back with weapons to fight the Whisperers. And then she never returns. You would just have to assume the worst. And that would be an awful thing to have to assume of Michonne.
It really would, especially since it would be very clear that if she just never came back, it would be the show being like, well, something might have happened to her, or maybe she's fine and she'll come back sometime. Like they're Maggie-ing her.
I'd be so infuriated by that. What are the odds that she runs into Heath? Heath is on Bloodsworth Island.
Okay, that I would enjoy.
That'd be fun.
Like, what the hell is Corey Hawkins doing lately?
He's probably crushing it on stage or something. I don't know. I don't have his IMDb handy, but I'd be thrilled to see Heath make a comeback. I feel like nobody else would really. I don't know. I think that there'd be a contingent of people who would care. I don't know. I think it was just something I was thinking about the other day. Is like, is this how you get Heath back on the show? He's secretly on Bloodsworth Island. You lose Sadiq, but you gain a Heath. I don't know. I don't know about that trade.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but. You know, Corey Hawkins didn't, you know, that 24 reboot kind of never went anywhere and haven't really seen him since. I feel like he was poised to do great things, and I'm not sure those great things are coming back to The Walking Dead.
Outside of the Michonne and Virgil stuff, like the big thing that we're left with in this episode is this cliffhanger that I kind of want to put in quotes right now because And listen, this could be the kind of thing where I say this now and we come back on February 23rd or 24th or whatever it is, Jess, and immediately it's like, I shouldn't have said that. I willed this into existence. I screwed up. I made a mistake. I'm sorry. But Jess, I'm not concerned for anybody here. I'm not concerned for anybody. We leave the episode with, I think it's Daryl, Carol, Connie, Kelly, Jerry, Magna, and Aaron versus the herd in the subterranean lair with Magna. I'm not concerned for any of them. Maybe that's stupid on my part that I'm not like actually worried that we're going to lose anyone here, but it doesn't feel to me like we've got like a real red shirt in the mix.
Okay.
And I feel like maybe I'm setting myself up for disaster.
Okay. Mark it, everyone. November 25th, 2019, Josh Wigler manifested rocks falling and 8 major characters dying in minute 1 of the season 10B premiere. Josh made this happen right here and now. It is his fault. Make sure you do at him.
Do at me on that one. I'd like to be reminded. Well, I guess also now, like, if any of them die, I probably will listen to
you. Existence. You killed Jerry.
I killed Jerry.
Oh, my God.
No, Jerry. No, Jerry. Yeah, the post-production team deep faking the mid-season premiere now so that they can kill as many of these people as possible.
Yeah, I'm going to submit that a cliffhanger that immediately gets explained to us as not being a cliffhanger by virtue of showing a preview in which people are not in mortal peril. I think we got to call that a cave hanger.
A cave hanger. I gotta say, I didn't watch the preview. Can you illuminate me on what the preview indicates? If you guys don't listen to or watch the previews, and you don't want to listen to this part, you can skip ahead maybe 30 seconds.
I mean, I didn't watch it. I didn't Zapruder it to really get it close, but they're fighting and some of them are not in the cave anymore after that.
Okay. All right, so they're going to get out of the cave. I'm disappointed. I kind of thought that they would spend the rest of their lives in the cave.
They could spend the whole season 10B in the cave. That would be par for the Walking Dead course.
That's old school. New school Walking Dead gets them out of the cave in the opening scene. They do. They create some sort of human ladder. They parkour their way out of the cave, and they're out of there in short order. How long do you think it's going to take them? Do you think they're out of the cave in the first, like, half of the first episode back? Does it take the whole first episode for them to get out of there?
Well, I can't imagine how much interesting shit is happening inside that cave that we need to spend a whole episode there. And I can't even imagine, like, there's just too much happening that's not that interesting inside the cave that you pretty much have to get right out of there.
Yeah.
You can't spend the whole time in there fighting zombies. That's not an interesting hour of television.
Certainly not without headlamps.
Certainly not. And they didn't bring their headlamps. And how mad are you at Carol right now, P.S.?
Carol, what are you doing, Carol?
Hey.
Come on, Carol. Carol.
It's just like she sees Alpha and, like, all the thought, reason, and logic goes right out the window.
Yeah. She's, like, stuck on Alpha like Zordon stuck on Alpha. Like,
God.
She can't get away.
It's like one of my coworkers just adopted a dog, and the other morning she had a bar of soap in her shower, and she knew the dog was interested in the soap, and so she knew she had to deal with it. And the dog was, like, off in the other room chewing on something, and she's like, I gotta go stop this. She puts the soap down, goes out to deal with the dog. The dog, like, barrels past her, zips into the bathroom, and 3 seconds later has eaten the soap.
Oh,
and it's
no.
Like, Alpha is the soap, and Carol is the dog. You cannot separate them. She knows what she wants, and if it's in her line of sight, she must have it.
Oh my God, Alpha could use some soap for sure.
No kidding. Well, you know, they probably make the soap out of, like, walker guts. They got the whole cottage industry over at the Whisperers that I don't even want to know about. They use mud every baths. Part of the walker.
Mud baths. Yeah, Carol really, whoever, if anybody dies in this cave-in, I think that you can go 50% of the blame on Josh Wigler and 50% of the blame on Carol Pelletier, because you know that Carol's not going to die. Carol and Daryl are 1,000,000% safe. And then, like, you can start... We can start getting into the game of, like, all right, who could we see from the rest of this crew not making it out of this situation alive? Because probably someone's going to die. It's just, it's hard for me to picture exactly who it's going to be.
Yeah, we didn't send anybody down there that feels expendable.
Yeah, and I think that that's a testament to the show right now, that they've done good work in kind of getting us invested in those characters, or at least making them feel pretty important. You know, everybody except for Yumiko and Luke from the Magna crew. Everybody's here. Aaron's here. Aaron's a very important character these days. Jerry's just so lovable, so you don't want to see anything bad happen to Jerry. But somebody from that list of five is probably not going to make it. Do you really think it's Jerry?
I am really afraid for Jerry. Although I think I would be more worried, actually. I think it's got to be one of Connie or Kelly.
I agree. And I think it's Connie.
It could be Connie, because that gives Daryl a reason to be really, really PO'd at Carol.
Yeah, yeah. They're gonna cave Connie. Is what's coming up next. It makes sense, Jess. Lauren Ridloff is in a Marvel movie, right? Like, she's filming a Marvel movie. She's in the Eternals. Her career is about to explode. How is she able to be making that movie and The Walking Dead at the same time? Although there are reports that The Walking Dead shot out of sequence this year to accommodate some schedules. So perhaps her schedule is one of those schedules that's been accommodated for. But there are also a lot of narrative reasons why losing Connie would be big for Kelly, obviously, as Kelly is starting to have a harder time hearing, and losing her sister and everything. Like, she's going to lose a lot of support systems in losing her sister. And like you say, it's a big divide between Carol and Daryl if something happens to Connie, because Carol got them in this bad situation. If Connie is able to do something that she deems, like, heroic, to sacrifice herself for Daryl and Kelly here, like, that seems very in character for her. So there's a lot of reasons of all of these people, I think, that Connie could be the one we would lose, which would be a mega bummer, because I love this character. I would be very disappointed to lose this character at this point.
Yeah, she's bringing something new out of a lot of different characters on the show. And I think there was some heavy foreshadowing when she holds up the sign that she's written down that says anything for us.
Right.
Says to me, that says noble self-sacrifice. It's got that written all over it.
Yeah. Anything for us, which means, Daryl, when we find ourselves trapped in a cave with 1,000 walkers, I'm going to throw myself into the mosh pit so that you can all escape. Well, that seems like an ill-advised strategy. Whatever she does, I hope it's smarter than that.
Yeah, there's got to be a better tactic than that. I wonder what there is. It's going to be cool, I think.
Hope so. If we have to lose Connie, it better be an awesome way to go. Like, it better be, like, completely her call. She gets to do something really cool on her way out the door. And it's just, like, a great scene. Otherwise, I'm going to be pretty mad about it.
Yeah, yeah. It can't be just one of those, like, punk-ass deaths where she's like, okay, everybody's out. I'm the last person out. Oh, no, I'm getting eaten.
Right. Or, that's going to be annoying.
No.
That's going to be annoying if that's what we get.
Most punk-ass Walking Dead death.
Sad Daryl face. He's like, Connie, no!
Yeah.
I don't want to see any of that.
Nobody wants to see emo Daryl. Most punk-ass Walking Dead death is the one where everybody gets out and seems okay, and then one of them lifts up their shirt to reveal a bite.
Yeah.
It's like, how'd you get bit on the torso anyway? Doesn't it make more sense to get bit on an extremity? But no, I got bit on the torso and now I'm doomed.
Yeah. Carl style.
Yeah. On Fear, we had a death like that, Ophelia style.
Oh, right. That's right. How quickly I forget. Fear the Walking Dead.
Yep. I think Deanna went out that way.
Yeah, she had a similar thing happen to her. That's right.
And they all get bit on the torso. What the hell?
Those torsos are so tasty, though, for the walkers. Mm. All the good stuff. Their ribs. Ribs are where it's at.
Get my carne asada.
Yeah, that's stick to your ribs feeling. Mm-hmm. I really hope we're out of the caves quickly, Jess. I don't think that I'm going to be so hot on like a full episode of The Spelunking Dead. I hope that we're in and out of this situation pretty quickly. But I'm afraid that like the mid-season premiere is going to be all spelunking all the time.
Well, let's keep on yelling at production and perhaps they will cave under pressure.
I don't know if that works. We'll have to see. We've tried that tactic elsewhere. But I think at this point you've convinced me that we should probably be a candlelight vigil for Connie. But no vigil for Virgil yet. You got to imagine that Virgil will be coming back to the show with Michonne. What do you want to put the over under on that? Does she come back before the halfway point of the second half? Of the final half of season 10, or does she not show up until right at the very end?
I think we see her. Here's how I think it goes down. I think we get very invested in what's happening with the Whisperers, and I think we have some other interesting storylines coming down the pike in 10B. And I think there will be a very strong through line of this Whisperer War or arc, and we're going to want to know what happens next. We're going to end an episode on a cliffhanger, and then we're going to cut over to Bloodsworth Island, and we're going to get the Bloodsworth Island Tabitha the Goat episode. Starring Virgil as Tabitha the Goat, and there's going to be a whole society and a whole thing that Michonne is doing that has nothing to do with the story that we've just now started to once again get invested in, because that's how Walking Dead rolls.
If there are there any goats on Bloodsworth Island? Do we know if this is a thing?
You know, the goats had to go somewhere.
They had to go somewhere. Bloodsworth Island, apparently, according to Wikipedia, it says from 1942 to 1995, the United States Navy used the island as a shore bombardment and bombing range for firing and dropping live ordnance from ships and aircraft. This included bombs, small and large caliber ammunition, rockets and missiles that contained explosives, propellants, and other energetics. Due to extensive contamination by unexploded ordnance, the island is currently off limits to the public. So a couple of things from that, Jess. Do we think that Michonne is going to come back with a rocket launcher, much like the rocket launcher that took out the saviors and helped save Alexandria back in the day? And also, how concerned should we be about the contamination of Bloodsworth Island? Maybe there's a reason this place is abandoned, Virgil.
Maybe there's contaminated zombies. Remember the last time we saw contaminated zombies? They were super gross. Of course we're going there. Yeah, we're going where the gross zombies are.
Yeah. If they're going to send, if Michonne's going to Bloodsworth Island and she's going to come back with a, with like a blood infection, I'm going to be pretty pissed off at Virgil. The leftovers can't save you, guy. You got, you got Michonne in the sickness, and I'm not cool with that.
Yeah, who are you going to be madder at? Carol for getting Connie killed, or Virgil for giving Michonne the Bloodsworth Islanditis?
I mean, if, Michonne goes to Bloodsworth Island and gets, like, hepatitis and dies, like, I'm going to be pretty pissed off. I'm not going to be happy about that. It's going to be a really shitty way to write that character out of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, okay, can I just say, also, we have a character named Dante and a character named Virgil.
I know.
Are we just, like... Someone on the writing staff have a classics degree or something?
I think so, probably.
We're going to get a character named Homer next?
Yeah. That'd be great. They're going to show up to Springfield.
Here's my buddy Euripides.
Yeah. That's a great future character.
These guys are twins, Euripides and Aeschylus.
Yeah. Meet Romus and Romulus. I don't think that's where we're going to go. But you never know. You never know. Walking Dead likes to trot out the unusual names. Yeah. Should we talk about Dante? Is it time?
I think it is time to talk about Dante.
We get it, like you said, it really was as if the powers that be had listened to the podcast. Are like, all right, Josh and Jess have been really high on us all season long, and we let them down for our first meaningful way. With the Dante as a whisperer thing, we gotta work long nights for the rest of the week to deep fake something that's going to make some semblance of sense. And so we get this cold open that shows the Dante origin story, how Dante got his whisperer on. And we come to find out from Alpha that Dante's fairly new to the pack. She's very explicit. Lydia has never seen your face. So
they definitely put that in just that for us.
ADR.
Oh my God.
That was ADR.
I put that in post. Yeah. Okay. And P.S. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So talk me through it. So I guess like her plan is like, we're going to send you in. They're so nice that they're going to take you in and then you can take them out from within. And we get to see like the montage of how Dante pulls all of this off. But you're unsatisfied, Jessica. You do not like it.
So do not like it. It still doesn't make any sense. I guess the idea is that he's brand new to the group. And so he hasn't like made the rounds and introduced himself yet. And I don't know how you would introduce yourself if you're in the Whisperers anyway, because you're not allowed to have a name. But in order to prove his worth, this is like the worst frat hazing ever. He has to like go into Alexandria and infiltrate them and like leave some notes in an Altoids box in a tree, like Alpha is Boo Radley or something.
Yeah.
And okay. If he's not fully indoctrinated into the Whisperers, what is his incentive here? It's like, oh, okay, you can go hang out with these people full time who don't bathe and wear dead people's skin on themselves. And if you look at Alpha wrong, she's just going to stab you. Or you can go to a place where you get to take a shower and your skills are valued and people like you and you can crack jokes and have a name and eat good food. And oh, yeah, you want to be with the people that wear the dead people on themselves and don't have names. So you got to go move in with these other people in this far nicer circumstance and never once be tempted to just stay there and be in the nice place.
Yeah,
that doesn't make sense. If he's not fully Whisperer, if he's not like born and bred, like ride or die Whisperer, he can't be trusted to go in there and not just like peace out on the Whisperers. And it's weird that he doesn't. And it's weird that Alpha trusted him enough to do that when he wasn't fully one of them.
Altoids, by the way, they apparently only last for about 12 months at normal room temperature. Like, I was wondering, did they at least like get any use out of the Altoids before they turned it into like their secret mailbox? But the Altoids are probably long gone at this point.
Yeah, but there are so many things like you have many, many uses. If you're a crafty person, you can build a lot of things out of an Altoids tin. So I would imagine in the zombie apocalypse, an Altoids tin would be a fairly sought after commodity.
Yeah, bountiful item. I think everything that you say makes sense. I think the big issue is like it's very hard to find a way to make this two things are kind of incompatible with each other. One is you have to get, or at least there's this urge to create a situation where Dante as a whisperer is unknown to Lydia. But you also have to create Dante as a whisperer who is going to be very loyal to Alpha. And so you would think that that person has to have been part of the whisperer community for a very long time, because the amount of time that he's with the whisperers can't really compare to the amount of time he's in Alexandria for, you would think. So he's in Alexandria for longer than he's with the Whisperers, based on the way that Alpha kind of describes his tenure with the Whisperers. And it was like, you did good back there. Like, that was like his first thing. So why is he gonna not just be like, you know what? Alexandria seems legit. Like, he seemed like he genuinely really liked Sadiq, right? Like, so like, you know, some of this was appealing to him. So I feel like there has to be maybe like you have to find a way to make the two things compatible where like it doesn't matter if he had been there for a long time. He's just acting so differently that Lydia doesn't recognize him. Maybe there's a way to do it like that. But I think it's just very tricky to kind of find that balance. Maybe you have to have him be at the Hilltop rather than at Alexandria. Maybe that's the ultimate solution. But it still feels very clumsy to me. Yeah. Ultimately, it doesn't feel very satisfying.
Maybe you make the Whisperers like way grosser than they already are. And so having a bath is such a transformative thing that you wouldn't even think twice about it.
Right.
But I want to visit the way in which he infiltrates Alexandria, because this kind of doesn't make any sense either. It makes more sense than I initially might have given it credit for. And I thought about this really hard, and this is something that didn't occur to me. So I guess this was pretty smart on Alpha's part to suggest this. But he just kind of goes out and like lets some other group of survivors save him. But it does not make any sense to me that this group of survivors would then be taken in. Like, we saw what a hard time they gave Magna's group when Magna's group rolled up. Magna's group hadn't done anything wrong. Nobody had gotten spikened up to that point. And you're supposed to believe that a bunch of random survivors are going to rock up to Alexandria and be welcomed in when Michonne wouldn't even let Magna live there.
Right.
So that doesn't make any sense to me. And especially they show Dante on his video interview saying, oh, I've been with these people for months. And it's like, no, you haven't. And they would probably not corroborate that story. So what are you playing at here?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Unless, like, was he with them for a couple of months to, like, buy some cover? And, like, they just kind of yada-yada that a little bit? Because a certain amount of time has passed since the spikening. So it wouldn't completely not make sense. But it's like still feels like that's a lot of chances that you're taking in order to pull off this con.
Yeah, well, the spikening, I'm going to try to parse out the timeline. The spikening happened like in conjunction with a harvest festival in the fall. And then we got one episode over the winter. And now is it summer? So it's been like 6 to 9 months.
Something like that, I think. Yeah. And it seems like Magna and her people have been there for about a year at this point.
Okay. So, all right. So that might have given, at the outside, I think that gives Dante maybe 2 months to be with these new people.
Right, right. Still a long time to like have to be on the road with these people before you get to Alexandria.
Yeah, it seems like this is a really long con that they're working, and there's a lot of potential for something to go wrong.
Yeah. But instead, it really worked out pretty well for a while there.
Yeah.
If not for like this clicking tick, Dante may have made it out of there okay.
Well, which is another point in favor of maybe Alpha needs to vet her spies a little bit better.
Yeah. You really want someone nondescript. Somebody who doesn't have, like, especially if that shouldn't be terribly hard to find among the Whisperers, considering your whole MO is silence. You couldn't find like the one person who doesn't just like click in the ear of somebody when they get excited at violence. Like the, you had to pick the clicker.
Yeah, this is, it's just ludicrous. It's such bad judgment, and Dante frankly deserved to get busted.
Dante had a bad episode. Dante gets busted. Sadiq, he figures it out. He has to kill Sadiq, and then Rosita shows up with Coco, and then all hell breaks loose. Sadiq, by the way, record time coming back to life as a zombie, I felt like.
Well, they did a lot of experiments on this in Fear the Walking Dead, I feel like, and it's anything from like 20 minutes to 2 hours.
And in Fear the Walking Dead, they established that, like, it doesn't matter where you, like, how you die. Like, it's sort of just random how you come back.
Yeah, I don't think they ever found any rhyme or reason to it, but I don't know how many people they killed. I'd have to go back. This was, and I wouldn't mind going back and rewatching this, because this was about the time that Fear the Walking Dead was actually good.
This is, like, early season 3, right? Like, this was,
yeah, this is, they, yeah, the right military
before Travis days. bought the farm. I guess he didn't make it to the farm. Before he jumped out of the helicopter. I feel like it was like Sadiq was dead for like 5 minutes and he came back as a walker. That was like one of the freshest zombies we've seen in a long time.
Well, yeah, because Dante didn't have time. I think he was about to make sure Sadiq didn't come back and then he got interrupted.
Yeah. So this is really quick turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's lucky for everybody.
Those military guys would have been very impressed. They're like, wow, record time. This is like a 2 minute transformation. It's pretty good. I think considering that, Jess, I would be so bold as to say to take it back to Negan and Brandon from a few weeks ago on the hotness scale. I think that Sadiq is probably the hottest zombie we've encountered in The Walking Dead.
I mean, if you really want to stoop to Negan's level, I guess so. But
he's the freshest zombie by far.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I did think that it was kind of fun. We were talking last week about how whenever somebody on the main cast dies, they never actually get the chance to come back as a zombie. Like, it's very, very rare that you see someone that you've known as an alive person then get to really sink their teeth into a zombie role. So I thought that was a lot of fun that Sadiq got the opportunity. And I wouldn't be surprised if Avi Nash was like, okay, I will be on your show, but I want to come back as a zombie when you kill off my character.
He did a great job. He did. His zombie acting was excellent. Avi Nash really went for it. And the whole like Sadiq shambling towards Coco in the crib was very upsetting, very upsetting. And I didn't know where we were going to go with it. This is the best scene of the episode for sure.
Yeah, 100%. It was genuinely terrifying. And like in the back of your head, you think they probably won't go there, but it sure looks like they're going to go there. And it was kind of the same thing. This echoes a scene. Like if we want to talk about the last time a major character came back as a zombie, when Deanna got bit and was like languishing and you see her hanging over baby Judith's playpen and you're like, oh no, she's eating baby Judith. And it turns out, no, she's just like, oh, I heard her crying. I went to soothe her. I'm not a zombie yet. It was a lot like that, but it was like more terrifying.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely freaky. And it was because like, I think it didn't help that like we had just been through all of that trauma with him. Like, you know, we had like more appreciation for like sort of his mental state on his way out of this world. Made it sadder. The fact that his own child is involved, and Rosita, who he cared about, is involved, that Rosita has to be the one to put him down. This was a great reminder, by the way, that Rosita is incredible. Rosita, like, multitasked the shit out of that situation.
Yeah, it was great. It was like she was able to triage it in her mind. Okay, first we got to take out the zombie. We got to take out the... We got to take out Dante. We got to immobilize him, take out the zombie, deal with the kid.
Like, right.
All of the things at once. It was fantastic.
Yeah. You know, you put the mask on yourself first when the plane is going down. And Rosita did like a very complicated version of that. She neutralized the jag off. She stabbed the zombie in the head and she got the baby out of harm's way. And she did it all fairly elegantly, given the stakes of the situation. I was deeply impressed by Rosita. It's a great reminder that when Sasha was like, Rosita, you're like the best utility player we've got. Like, I can do the suicide mission. You've got to stay alive. That she was on to something. Rosita is really a badass.
Yeah, she is. And I think it's nice when the show remembers that.
I hope the show remembers it more. I want to see more Rosita. This was great.
Yeah, I think she could step up to the A-team now.
But then the show gives Father Gabriel the kill. he gets to kill the bad guy and like steal the loot. He gets like the experience points for this fight, because Father Gabriel is eventually going to go to Dante once they have Dante in his cell. And he just like goes to town on Dante. That was surprising.
Well, I think this is a really interesting thought. How far has Father Gabriel come as a character? Because remember when we first met him, he was horrified when Rick and company murdered all those Terminus people in the church. And he's just like standing there like aghast at like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys just like brutally killed all these people in my church and there's blood everywhere. This is horrible and disgusting. And he's like throwing up when somebody kills a walker near him. And now he's just going ham on Dante.
Yeah, he's just like goes to town. I tried to count how many times he stabbed him. I lost track after like the fifth stab.
It was a lot of stabs.
It's a lot of stabbing.
Mm-hmm.
It was like very vicious. It was a really ruthless hit. And like he was like screaming in his face. Like he went like. He went straight to the bottom of the deep end there, Father
His
Gabriel.
His kill switch is firmly on.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen Father Gabriel in like kind of these freaky moments before, like when he like walked out of the gates of Alexandria and he wanted a walker to kill him and he couldn't do it. And then he like went nuts on the walker. I think it was he fought Sasha. Is that right? Is that who he was fighting? In that episode when he came back to Alexandria and he accidentally let the walker in and he's like trying to get Sasha to kill him. I think it was Sasha. Maybe it was somebody else. Maybe it was Rosita. I don't remember.
It would be weird if it was Rosita because now they're a thing.
It's great history. That's a hell of a meet cute.
I feel like
remember that time I tried to kill you. Yeah, that was weird.
I feel like that's what they play on the zombie apocalypse equivalent of the Hallmark Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we are officially down from three men and a baby to two men and a baby, and Eugene is occupied elsewhere, so it seems like it's really just going to be the Father Gabriel and Rosita show. Father Gabriel is the father now, but I wonder what the future holds for these two. This is a very seismic events in their lives.
Yeah, someone on Reddit had this really hilarious and really terrible meme. It was just a picture of Eugene being like, oh, one down, one to go.
Yeah, getting closer.
Yep.
It's inching towards it.
Yep.
Trying to think of what else from the episode that's really worth getting into.
I would like to talk a little bit about the library.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because here's some interesting things within that library. I thought it was a lot of fun that there are still libraries out there with things that are good to take, because I feel like there's not that many of them anymore. I liked getting a little bit more Luke. I like it when he's like a music nerd out of things that like nobody has any music anymore. It's like him and Alden and that's it. So it's like trying to make people care. I liked Judith's little moment with her book, and I think that's something we got to save for the CBZ, but I liked that we're calling back to other people while we're thinking about like, what can we take out of the library that people will like? I wish they had shown what people were taking for books. Maybe I'm the only person that cares about that, but
no, I'd been interested.
Yeah. But also I want to talk about the fact that they didn't sweep the library for walkers before they started taking books. And where
That's
were these
probably something they would have wanted to do?
Yeah. Where were these walkers hiding out and how did they get the jump on everybody? That was just stupid.
It wasn't great. And I really thought we were about to lose Luke. I think that may have been my biggest surprise of the episode, is that when Luke is like getting like pinned by two walkers, that not a one of them got a chunk out of Luke. I really thought that they were going to take a big bite make a real snack out of Luke.
Yep. Yeah. But they, Luke survives by the, you know, sheer force of random act of Virgil, who just kind of shows up because he's also hanging out in the library in the afternoon, because the library is the place to be. I also noted that Virgil had an orange backpack, and orange backpacks are kind of a thing in Walking Dead world.
Oh, right. Usually if you have an orange backpack, it's not great, right?
Not great. No. And it's kind of, it's interesting. Michonne is about to take all this, all the dude's stuff, kind of the same way that she took all the stuff from the hitchhiker that she failed to pick up.
Right. I wonder, is there any way it's the same bag?
I mean, no, it couldn't be because they took that bag.
Okay, so it couldn't be. It'd be great if that was like the traveling backpack in the world of the Walking
Dead. No, it wouldn't be great, Josh, because then we'd get a web series about it. You'd like be forwarding.
Orange backpack.
You'd be fast forwarding through the commercials, and this would come up, and you'd think, oh, good, the show's back, and it's not. It's freaking orange backpack.
Orange backpack.
But that was not an accident that dude had a big orange backpack. That I refuse to believe it.
Well, that's ominous. That's ominous. That's a bad sign.
Yeah. And I liked Judith disarming him as he tries to run away at Oceanside. That was fun.
Judith's a badass. Little ass kicker indeed.
Well, it's interesting the Judith Michonne dynamic is such that Michonne has basically spent Judith's entire life bouncing ideas off of her, even when she's like tiny. And so this is what Judith does now. She's just like, she's just Michonne's closest confidant and chief advisor. And they have this really unique relationship. And Judith has some ideas that like most adults are not going to think of. And I really love watching the two of them have conversations where they try to solve problems together. I think that's really fun. And of course, it would be a terrible thing for a child to be in that position in the not zombie apocalypse, but it's a different world.
Yeah. No, in the zombie apocalypse, it's cool.
Oh, super cool.
It's super cool. You want to get into some feedback? We got a little bit of feedback for this week's podcast.
Yeah, I think that's okay. We can do that.
Let's hop into some feedback. It's going to be a long time before we get to your feedback again, but just in case you are listening to this podcast in the immediate run-up to the season 10B premiere, the way that you can send your feedback, twd@postshowrecaps.com, or you can tweet at us. I'm at Round Howard. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. Our Twitter account is at Post Show Recaps. Any one of those methods will get your feedback into our lives, and then we will get that feedback into your lives here on the podcast. Let's begin with this from Podrick Racer, who said, how big of a hit to the head is required to kill a walker? It didn't seem to take much to get the hard hat walker this week.
Well, hard hat walker seemed like his skull had been compromised already.
Yeah,
I think he's a bad example, but also he was really super gross. There was a lot of fresh goo that shouldn't have been there if on a walker that's been out that long.
Much goo.
I think it really varies how hard you need to hit a walker, depending on like how necessary it is for him to die in your story.
Right.
Like you can kill him by like slamming a porta potty door on his head sometimes. Other times you really have to like obliterate him.
You know what else though? Sometimes apparently all you have to do is like slash their nose off. And like that's enough for like the show to like register in the universe as a brain stabbing. I do get annoyed about this on The Walking Dead, that people seem to just like slash very lightly at the head and then they like drop as though they've just been like skewered through the brain. And listen, I'm no expert when it comes to stabbing people in the head. I do not profess to have this knowledge, but it just doesn't read as a kill shot a lot of the time. I'm mostly, again, looking at Fear of the Walking Dead and like Alicia's weapon, her like very strange, like mesh wire, like stabby stab thing. Like she's always like slashing somebody in the cheek, and then that's like counts as like a brain shot.
I mean, it could be impregnated with basilisk venom or something. I don't know.
Are walkers susceptible to such a thing?
I don't know. Maybe
it's possible.
It's a made up world. I'm not sure, but yeah, it sure seems like even in the best of circumstances, and I've talked about this before, I've not had much experienced stabbing anybody either, but I have carved pieces of meat and I have like dissected things in biology class, and skulls are not soft and permeable, and it's not like plunging a knife into a pot roast. You really, to stab somebody through bone would require a lot of force that I'm not confident that any human in this world would really have. So if you're having this like struggle with your zombie and they keep stabbing them through the temple, that's got to be a really hard thing to permeate. And yeah, it sure seems like maybe you get like the zombie disease and your skull gets very soft and your temple becomes very stabbable, but it sure seems like there are easier ways to get in there.
Yeah. People in the zombie apocalypse just be permeating. They're permeating pretty well.
They are permeating all the time. It's permeable AF.
Always be permeating in the zombie apocalypse. What does Cabin do, Chef, for us?
One of my favorites, Cabin Douche.
Yes, of course.
He says, they need to wrap up the whispering by the end of season 10, or they haven't learned any lessons. Amen, yeah. Cabin Douche.
Cabin Douche with the wisdom, dropping the knowledge as per usual. Yeah, I think that that's right. I think that this episode, we're finding a lot to laugh at. I think that there have been some scenes that have been, that were cool in this episode. Just before we got on, you and I were talking about like, was this the weakest episode of season 10 so far? And I'm inclined to say yes. I think this was my least favorite of the, and I think maybe it wouldn't necessarily have been if not for the fact that it's in a finale position, even if it's just the mid-season finale. I guess I just expect a little more oomph from my finale. Maybe that's just what TV has taught me. But by and large, you and I have both been really high on season 10 all along the way. So for us to be taking some knocks at the show right now, 8 episodes deep into the season, pretty strong season of The Walking Dead so far, if that's the score right now. So I'm inclined to think that the strength of the show is mostly going to hold, and we are at least at a place of maturity within the storytelling of The Walking Dead that the people who are making these decisions understand that, yeah, we gotta be done with the Whisperers in season 10, otherwise it's taking way too long. I really hope so. I hope that the Cabin Douche prophecy doesn't come true, Jess.
I have to imagine that just knowing what you and I know about like certain characters that have been cast, certain people that are leaving the show, certain other people that are coming on, I feel like I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it does seem like we're moving this story along. It seems like they're not going to linger on it for 3 years like we did with the Savior War.
Yeah, I hope so.
It'd be a nightmare.
This is from AM. AM says, I feel slightly better about the Dante twist after the scene between him and Alpha. It explained a lot. And the scene with Walker Sadiq going for baby Coco is one of the darkest moments of the show. I would agree that it's probably one of the darker scenes, certainly in recent memory, is like a character that you liked as much as you liked Sadiq, now dead, back as a zombie and trying to eat his own baby. That's pretty dark.
Yeah, that's super duper dark. And that's a place that the show doesn't get to very often. Like I don't feel very often like I am genuinely scared watching this show.
Yeah.
And this
doesn't happen much.
This is like actually scary.
What about that first point of AM? And I want to talk about it in the very specific language that is used here by AM. AM had said, I feel slightly better about the Dante twist after the scene between him and Alpha. Jess, do you feel slightly better about the Dante twist?
I sure
after
don't
the scene feel, with him and Alpha?
I surely do not feel all the way better, but
right.
Slightly better might be okay, because at least they're acknowledging it. So I can give them slight.
Yeah, just a tiny, tiny bit. What does Jason Smith have for us?
Okay, Jason Smith says, how is Daryl not pissed at Magna and crew over the stealing and subsequent hoarding of supplies at Hilltop? They completely just glossed over that storyline, along with how he and Michonne got the X scars.
we found out about the X-Scars, right? Wasn't that when, like, didn't he and Michonne get captured by Michonne's friend?
Yeah.
Isn't that how they got the X-Scars?
I thought they got the X-Scars when they got captured by the roving band of children.
Right.
Which also made absolutely no sense in the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, my God.
But just remember, Josh, if you run into anybody you know after the zombie apocalypse hit, they're probably leading a cult of children that are going to kill you or give you an X-Scar.
Yeah, I think I'm going like full strangers in the zombie apocalypse. This is like my, like, if I make it to the zombie apocalypse, Jess, it's like my Felicity moment. I get to cut off all my hair and start over. That's what's happening with me in the zombie apocalypse. Just a tabula rasa, as we say on Down the Hatch.
So are you saying that you're going to be the one with the creepy child cult?
Yes.
All right.
Right.
I noted. I'm not letting you into my Alexandria.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm just going to go back to my summer camp and be like the head of camp and have like a cult camp that we'll have people come. We've got free bug juice. We've got kayaking. But instead, you just walk away with a very funky X scar for no really good reason.
Yeah, it's the second worst hazing ever.
It's not good. I think that, like, depending on how this works out with the cave people right now, that if like Connie dies and like Magna and Daryl both get out of there, Daryl's just going to be like pissed off at everybody. He's like, Magna, this is your fault. You're going to steal all our shit. Like, I think that might not be over yet.
Yeah, but if he's madder at Carol, he might just let it slide.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, then they'll just forget about it. I think, like, if... You know what? I think Connie dying makes a lot of sense because now it's something that, like, Daryl and Magna, who Daryl being like a former outsider and Magna being a present outsider, maybe they can like bond over it to some degree. Right. Like, they're like, Connie was the best. Yeah. Connie was cool. Hey, stop being such a jerk and stealing all of her stuff. All right, fine. Like, maybe that's how they become like actual friends.
Yeah, it could be. Or maybe Connie lives and Daryl gets mad at her because she's in on the stealing stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Possible. Last bit of feedback is from Just Joe. Just Joe says, my overall take on this episode is that it had some really good scenes, but it didn't feel like it had much story progression at all. My favorite of the scenes was when Father Gabriel killed Dante. Brutality of it felt like a callback to when Rick's crew killed the cannibals in the church right after they met Father Gabriel. Oh, that's interesting. I guess I hadn't really connected that.
Yeah.
That it kind of felt like what happened in his church.
Yeah, well, that's actually, I think we were talking about that a little bit earlier, that's what a different person Gabriel is now.
Right.
Because that was one of the first scenes we got of him where he was so afraid of everything. Like, he was so craven, if you will, to borrow a word from another show,
yes,
that he, you know, he was like peeing himself watching people kill a walker. And then Rick just like goes total like slasher film on all of the Terminus people in the church. And he's just standing there like, what did you do to my church? And now he is the one that is like going ham on people.
Yeah, I think what didn't really register for me is like the level of brutality really does feel like it would have belonged in that scene.
Oh, yeah, he would have like this Gabriel would have been right there hacking people up.
Yeah, like Gareth, watch out. You know? Cavendish, watch out. Cavendish was there.
Oh, that's right. R.I.P. Yeah. Cavendish.
R.I.P. The
rest in pieces.
Not Twitter Cavendish, mercifully, is
I don't know. Sometimes Cavendish on Twitter tweets at me as if he is that Cavendish, like he's embodying the role. So I feel like if he was in this discussion, he would have been like, yeah, it was like that time I got chopped into pieces by Rick Grimes in the church.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. All right. We've got some comic book zone stuff that I think we'll get into. I can't imagine we're going to be there long. I don't have a lot anyway. I'll be curious to hear what you've got from this, Jess. But if you don't like comic book spoilers, tune out now. We're done with the main show. We'll be back February 23rd, I believe, is the date that Walking Dead returns. We'll be back somewhere thereabouts, a day or two. We'll be back for Walking Dead. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not ready for the hiatus. This is the first time in a while where, like, I'm not ready for a Walking Dead hiatus. I want to keep going.
Yeah, I can't believe like how many weeks it is. It's like almost 3 months that we're going to be away from this.
Way too long. Way too long.
Yeah.
But we'll be back in the future with some zombie stuff. And we'll be back in just a moment with the Comic Book Zone.
Comic Book Zone. Tune in now as spoilers aren't what you want to know. Avoid hearing plot points about Rick or Michonne. Now's the last chance to turn off during the intro. Comic Book Zone.
And we're back. All right, Jess, comic book spoilers. What do you got?
Well, first I want to talk about Talking Dead for a second. We need to talk about the actor playing Dante, thinking that he was going to play comic book Dante and then getting a very rude awakening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw he had an interview with Dalton Ross on EW where he was like, it was always on my bucket list to be in a comic book thing. And when my family found out I was Dante in The Walking Dead, they lost their minds. And then I went into the makeup trailer and everyone was like, oh, are you excited to be Dante? And I was like, yeah, I can't wait. Then Greg Nicotero came and he's like, hey, let me talk to you. And Greg Nicotero apparently was like, yeah, so like we're like totally like messing with the Dante thing. And I guess he like, you know, he says that he was excited about it. But I'd probably be like, oh, man, I thought that I was going to be like the new like romantic lead for Lauren Cohan when she came back. This is disappointing.
Yeah. Like, when do I get to make out with Maggie?
Yeah.
You know, when do I get to, you know, when do I get to give teenagers a bunch of crap about not forgetting their first piece of ass?
Right. When do I get to become Herschel's stepfather?
Yeah. It's gotta be a crushing blow that he's not even on the show at the same time.
How was he on The Talking Dead?
Yeah, he was okay. I wasn't really paying attention. I just kind of had it on for background noise.
Yeah, yeah. Seems like a fun guy. I don't know.
Yeah, he seems all right. I mean, the character was fun.
He was fine.
He was fine.
You're done. You know, I think for like a half season arc on Dante, I'm fine with that. I did an interview with Angela Kang, and she talked about how like in the writer's room forever, they kept being like, all right, how are we getting Dante onto the show? We want to bring Dante onto the show. And the idea just like never really manifested. And then Lauren Cohan left the show. And so they're like, all right, well, we're not going to be able to do the Maggie thing with Dante and Maggie. And then as they were starting to like chart out season 10 and they knew that they wanted to do like some like, you know, subterfuge and like the espionage stuff with the Whisperer War, they're like, oh, well, we should probably have like a mole inside of Alexandria. And in our, you know, in our everyday world, people are kind of just like incentivized to trust people like who are doctors or have uniforms or people who seem to be like, you know, in positions of service. But if we just introduce a random doctor, everyone's going to know that that's the Whisperer. They're going to know that that's the mole. And so that's when they had the idea where they're like, oh, what if we introduce Dante here? But it's basically just Dante in name and attitude, but he's a Whisperer. And so that was the idea, because they were like, if we bring Dante in, then all these clever comic book people are going to think that they know what's up with Dante and they're going to be sideswiped when they find out he's a Whisperer.
Yeah, I think they had their hearts in the right place. I feel like it wasn't quite. It still didn't quite go together. They didn't plug up all the plot holes.
Yeah, I think like the way that it like it syncs up with like his time with the Whisperers and being trusted enough to pull this off versus like having him like needing him to be somebody who was not on Lydia's radar. Those two things just have a very hard time crossing streams.
Yeah, and I feel like the comics never had that problem because they didn't lean so heavily on this lie.
Right. It wasn't something that they had to really worry about.
Yeah.
What was it about Judith in the books? Because this mapped for me as well. I'm wondering if it was the same thing for you.
Is this the same book that is alluded to at the very end of the comic series?
Right. So at the end of the comics, it's obviously whatever the show does is going to have to be somewhat different. Because at the end of the comics, it's Carl and Sophia and they're married and they've got a kid together and we're mostly following Carl's story. But Sophia has written a book about Rick Grimes and like the trials, as they are called, the world before the world that they're living at the very end of the comic book, you know, further into the future where we're much closer to a zombie free society. I was reading this as like Judith is talking about how like she's recording everything. She wants to make everything like, are they merging kind of like Carl and Sophia's fates so that if we get to that moment at some point down the line and we tell that story from Judith's perspective and like, you know, you cast Anna Paquin as Judith or whoever you're going to cast, right? Like, and you could just like kind of like do that full story through her perspective. Certainly felt like the building blocks were there.
And this is a pretty common post-apocalyptic literature device where it's like, okay, let's fast forward 30 years and everything is fine now and we're going to write about those who came before. Like, isn't this how The Postman ends?
I think it might be. It's been a while since I've seen The Postman.
Yeah, like they, you know, Tom Petty rescues them and then there's a big Kevin Costner statue erected 20 years in the future and his daughter is like, my father saved us.
Yeah. Yeah. It's essentially The Postman. Yes.
There's way more Postman references in The Walking Dead than you would think.
Than there ought to be. I don't know that there's too much else from the comic books in this episode.
Yeah, not a ton. It's really, they're off on their own direction right now.
You know, and that's one thing that I'll say for the cliffhanger is like, we don't know what's going to happen because this isn't from the comics. This is, you know, got nothing to do with the comics. And I may be being cynical and just thinking like, they're not going to do anything important here. Like nothing really seriously grave is going to occur. And then they'll be like, hey, Wiggler, you idiot. We're going to kill Jerry now. Like, you know, that could happen.
Jerry.
I'm going to feel awful about it if they kill Jerry. But the thing is that Jerry's not like Ezekiel isn't here. You can't imagine they killed Jerry without Ezekiel at least having eyes on the situation.
You would think.
Like, and what was like the last great Jerry and Ezekiel scene? We haven't had one.
Not all season. It's been a really long time. And Jerry's been kind of, I mean, he's been busy. He's been busy having three children and making a life for himself.
Yeah. Don't kill Jerry. Justice for Jerry if Jerry goes down.
Oh, we're going to riot.
We'll riot over Jerry. Yeah, I'm really trying to think of if there was like another big comic book thing that reached out to me, but there wasn't one. Other than I think like it's not like what we had was shown on the boat. I really was like, oh, come on. This is close, but it's not quite Pirate Michonne. But maybe like when she comes back from Bloodsworth Island, she could have the full pirate aesthetic.
I want Virgil's people to just be like full pirate people.
Yeah, I've got weapons for you. He didn't specify what kinds of weapons.
Yeah, it's a cutlass.
Yeah, it's a it's the Black Pearl. it's Barbossa and the full crew. Great.
What if they actually like dressed walkers up to look like Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh my god!
This is what Bloodworth Island is.
Yes, yes, I'm here for it. That'd be fun. That'd be fun. All right. Well, we'll see. We got a long time between now and then to think about all of the possibilities. I guess the issue is that like Walking Dead didn't leave us with an episode that has me really thinking about The Walking Dead that actively. You know what I mean? Like they didn't like leave us with something like so provocative that I can't stop thinking about the show.
Yeah. I mean, for better or for worse. Yeah, I'm really okay with them not like leaving us off in the middle of the Negening.
Sure, sure, for sure.
Like, what if they had cut away? Like, oh my god, there's a bunch of heads on a spike. See you next season.
But you know what? That would be tough. It would be tough, and I'm really glad that they did it in the penultimate last year instead of the finale. And I thought that was a very smart thing to do. But I think back to like. They kill Jesus in the mid-season finale of 9, and that's how like we kind of start to realize what the Whisperers are in that moment, what the threat level is there. And that was like a provocative thing that really gets you thinking about like what the rest of the season is going to look like. They took a major player off the board, but even more importantly, or at least just as importantly, they just kind of revealed the capabilities of the enemies that we're now up against. And that's something that really gets you going. I just don't think that there was really anything like that here. Maybe Michonne like going away and you're like, what's she going to come back with? But even then, like, I guess I'm just not thinking about it that hard. I would love for there to be another episode next week. Like, I just don't feel like there's enough to get me like psyched about 3 months of speculating on what's next for The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I don't think I have so many unanswered questions that I'm going to even think about it for a minute until February 23rd rolls around.
Yeah, I think we probably are going to think about it for another minute as we start wrapping up the podcast, and that's going to be about it.
Yeah, pretty much. And then we'll probably, actually, I was speaking to Rob, and he said he would get caught up, and he may tune in.
Oh, man.
And maybe we'll do a little catch-up podcast, because we've got a lot of weeks between now and then. Maybe
all right.
Prior to coming in, like, maybe we'll do a little catch-up with Rob before the season starts.
Look, I'm open to whatever zombie shenanigans you want to get into, Jess. I am up for it. I am very here for it. And if anybody has ideas for some zombie hijinks that we can do in the off-season, certainly something that we can arrange. And I know that even if we're not getting back into proper Walking Dead mode for some time, we're both very busy here on the post-show recaps as Mr. Robot is wrapping up. Down the Hatch continues apace. And Jess, I believe that you and Mike Bloom are talking about some Star Trek plans, even though we're a month or so away from that. That's going to be something that's in the future.
Yep, we're going to be covering Picard. We've got some short treks coming your way. The short treks did drop a while back, but we decided we'd just save them all up and like just binge them ahead of Picard. So that's coming up, and we're both very excited about that.
That's going to be fun. That's going to be beaming onto your podcast feeds in about a month. And as we said, very, very happy to talk about any kind of zombie thing that you guys are an overwhelming favor of. Maybe we can unleash the Officer Don Doff in the off season.
And you know, I once tried to put together a Walking Dead Amazing Race similar to the one we did for Game of Thrones, but it's just too dark. It's just too gross. I feel like anytime somebody got eliminated from the race, they'd get eaten, and I wasn't prepared to get that gross with it. So but maybe we can do another Brand Steel or something.
All right. We'll talk about it. We'll come up with some ideas. But if you've got ideas, let us know. TWD@postshowrecaps.com or tweet at us. I'm at Rand Howard. Jess is at Haymaker Hattie. At Postshow Recaps is our Twitter account. Subscribe to the podcast if you have not done so already. We'll be back in your feeds with some bonus content, hopefully in the next few weeks. But if not, we'll certainly be back for the rest of season 10 coming your way February 2020. Jess, anything else?
I think that'll about do it for me. Over at primetimer.com, you can check out a couple of things that I'm writing. I did a great piece on Dolly Parton's heartstrings. If you need something thematically similar to Walking Dead, except completely not.
And I've, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was some cognitive dissonance, let me tell you. And then also along those lines, since I feel like the Venn diagram of people who love these two things is going to be pretty big. I also have a piece dropping this week about the Thanksgiving Day parade and all of the great things that brings to your life.
Yeah, it brings great things to your life. Flying turkeys.
Yeah.
Flying everything.
Yeah, how else would we know what a falloon is?
I mean, that's a good question.
Yeah, so once you're finished like rewatching all of season 10A, you can watch the Thanksgiving Day Parade, and I feel like it's just there's such a through line there.
Amazing. Well, that's going to be a lovely, comforting reading for all of you who are celebrating Thanksgiving this week. A happy Thanksgiving to you, Jess. I am very thankful to be talking about Walking Dead with you every single time we do it. It has been such a delight. This is the joy that I have talking about The Walking Dead with you is tremendous. Truly, truly tremendous. It's a really fun show to talk about. Very low stakes is how it feels. And that's my favorite kind of podcasting these days. The lower the stakes, the better.
I feel you, man. It is. There's just like so much sheer joy in this little zombie talk show.
It's great. It's great. So thankful for all of you who are listening and making this podcast possible. Send us your ideas for off-season podcasts. We'll be back before you know it. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.